Welcome to the One Mason Road Camp Tevye podcast. You'll hear stories and anecdotes from special guests and hear how camp life has changed over the years. Okay, everybody, time for lineup.
Welcome to episode 5 of the One Mason Road Camp Tevye podcast. I'm Rob Goodwin. My guest tonight is a member of a beloved 3-generation Tevye family. At various times during the summer, she has been known to kayak on Lake Potanapo near Tevye in international waters, fortunately just out of the reach of the Potanapo Patrol. Welcome, Lynn Shapiro Eisenstein. How are you?
Great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, this has been like 10 months in the making
for us
to get together. There was a lot of negotiation between your people and my people. I'm glad we got it done, though. So I'm going to flip the script around a little bit of what I normally do. I want to start present day. So you are a Tevye parent.
That's right.
And correct me if I'm wrong in anything. Your daughter was just in Birria.
That's right. My youngest just finished her Birria year.
Fantastic. And then you have two others that did...
Dor Lador. Yes, I know. The typical is... Lador Vador, from generation to generation, but this program is just Dor Lador, generation to generation.
So with today, the way social media is, it looks to me like there's an army of people running around camp taking pictures all day long. And then the kids can't wait to be in pictures so that their parents will see them every week. Is that how it is?
That is not my exact perception, having been at camp and seeing the photographer. I know that there's at least one person there whose full-time job is to take pictures. As far as the children, you know, being picture hogs and trying to get their faces on the screen for the parents to see, all I can tell you is that since my kids started when they were little, I told them to get in every single picture possible when they saw a camera, run to it, and to flip me the sign, which is the I love you in American Sign Language, and that meant they're having a great time and do not need to worry. So I can't speak for other parents as far as, you know, if they're telling their kids to jump into pictures, but I did.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that being in a completely different generation, my parents would say, what do we need pictures for? We're going to see them on visiting day.
That's right, exactly. You know. But there is this funny little meme that is around these little cartoon characters that are parents of campers talking about looking on social media at the pictures of their kids at camp. And if you put into YouTube, refresh, you'll see a very humorous little cartoon about parents constantly updating their computer so they can see the most recent pictures.
That's funny. That is really funny. And foreign to me, you know, because of my generation.
That's right. And for me, growing up, my mother being there, I didn't get any mail. My friends, the parents were writing less letters. I mean, the contact, at least from the parents' point of view, is immediate. You know, the we can email the children on a daily basis, so they're getting mail daily if we wanted to, except for, of course, Shabbat. But the letters are still coming home. Sometimes as long after camp has ended as November, to sometimes even December.
Interesting. Very interesting. As far as, you know, there's actually communication that can go, you know.
It's delayed coming out, but not going in for sure.
Right. And now do the campers today get like a different colored shirt every week with their bunk? Because it looks like we got nothing.
It does look like what is going down. So if I understand correctly, and because they're in Birria, and that technically means that they're teenagers. The kids are doing this themselves. It's not necessarily camp sponsored. The kids decide as a group, because they're all in these group chats, what they want their swag to be. And they plan out their outfits, if you would, for final social. When we were kids, we got dressed up like the boys wore khakis and a nice button down, and the girls wore dresses. For the final social. The final social is not the way it was when we were kids. It's not like boys ask girls that, like, for, you know, to go with them as a date. Everybody's just dancing together. It's just super co-ed fun. But there are themes for their attire as the oldest campers. And it changes every year. So there's that swag. But then there's also something that started, I guess, maybe. All I know is that it's my sister Jill's Birria year. which includes campers such as Shira Citron, Jillian Levitan. I'm using everybody's maiden names because I don't know anybody's, you know, married names. It's Penny Chatsinoff. It's Stacey Kaufman. All those girls, they're still a very, very active, large contingency group of girls who are still gung-ho Tevye, even if their kids aren't necessarily there. But those girls made a shirt that for their Birria year, and it was a white t-shirt with red writing, and it said Birria, and I'm having a mind block on whatever year that was. But ever since then, it's been a thing, I think. There might have been a little bit of a hiatus, and it came back around later on. But now, for your Yavna and your Dahlia year, you get a shirt. All the kids in your bunk get the same color shirt, and it says Dahlia 19. Well, I guess it's not 19. It's like 2022 or whatever it is. And you're supposed to keep it. You keep it your whole entire life. And then when you get to Birria or to Chai, you get a shirt again. So for my kids, those are coveted items. And my son actually has his hanging on the wall. He doesn't really wear them. They're not to be messed with. They're not to be touched. They're not to be laundered with everything else. They are prized possessions, but they do break them out to wear at certain occasions, like the final banquet, where you will see a sea of color based on when your Dahlia year was, or if you're not yet in Birria, or Birria, however many years we've come since your Birria. So it's a pretty colorful scene, and I don't think, but I'm not 100%, that it's actually camp sponsored. I think that the kids do it themselves. I think, but I might be wrong.
Okay. That's pretty interesting. And
yeah.
You know what we had when I went?
Nothing.
We're lucky to have three white Tevye t-shirts.
Right.
And a Tevye beanie that you'd lose before the second Shabbat and have to order another one from canteen.
I know, I'm telling you. And here's the other thing is that they go to camp with, you know, the camp packing list, and the parents are asked to, you know, to purchase and to buy trip day shirts and to buy, I guess, like sports day shirts, I guess, regardless of whether your kid is playing a sport or not. But then there is some Tevye swag, not as much as there should be, in my opinion. There should be a Tevye store on the Tevye or on an alumni page or something of that sort. But it right now goes through Amerisport, which is the provider of the required shirts for the kids to bring to camp. But these Birria shirts are not part of that. This is, again, something that's being done, you know, on its own, separate from the list. But we had a staff shirt. Once you were on staff, I don't even remember as kids if we had trip day shirts. I mean, you all had to wear like a white t-shirt. That's what we wore.
Yeah, we didn't have trip day shirts. No way.
No. Yeah, for sure. But I have to say, Goodwin, I still have my Tevye staff shirt, and the style that it is, which was, you know, like almost like an Izod shirt, button up like that, is considered old school and a relic and historic and wanted, highly coveted. So I cannot say that the apple fell too far from the tree, because mine is hanging in my closet as well.
And I wish I still had mine.
I mean, seriously, I have a plastic bin. It's pretty big, filled with all my Kalanus, all the Tevye stuff throughout the years, including stationery from camp that I got when I was a kid in canteen, and whatever I could get my hands on nowadays that has been put out or, you know, for sale. But as far as I'm concerned, there is never enough Tevye swag.
Right, and I've bought a couple of shirts in the past year or two.
That's so good.
Which I love.
Do you buy them when you're at camp, like at a reunion, or how do you get them?
No, just there was at least one that was a fundraiser.
Oh yes,
so
right.
If you bought a shirt, X amount of dollars, you know, was made as a donation. So
right,
and you can, and obviously added on to that amount. I would definitely get a Tel Chai 1979 shirt if they were.
I know. we have to work backwards. Pretty cool. I mean, it's fun to see them wear their shirts, you know, because on the banquet night, on the final night of camp, you'll have kids from, let's see, I think it must be at least 10 years worth of shirts. So most people are not on staff for 8 years. And it's changed, because it used to be, it's one more year between finishing up Birria and being on staff, because they added the DLD and Kadima, and then you can be on staff. So because it used to be that the DLD was part of your Tel Chai Birya year, and now it's its own separate entity. So, I mean, there's the numbers dwindle as the years go on because kids are, you know, now done with college and they're getting jobs and they don't have the luxury of going to camp in the summertime. But it's still very cool to see, you know, pods of color in the photographs.
It is. No question. I did an episode with Mark Adelman. Actually, that was the first guest I had on.
I love it.
And we talked about, among other things, you know, Visiting Day was, years ago, was a big show. You know, you had the
water skiing show.
And whatever plays had happened to that point, I guess, you know, they sang songs or two, you know, from the plays. But Visiting Day is very different now. So
give us
a rundown.
I will, but I will tell you, old school Visiting Day is trying to make a comeback. Okay, So when we were kids, you didn't leave camp. You weren't allowed to leave camp. Your parents came in with a cooler and beach blankets and beach chairs and maybe your dog. And everybody sort of, for the most part, sat at the beach, but maybe anywhere around camp. And you stayed and you watched the water skiing show and you had lunch and you went and some of the activity areas were open and the counselor sat with you on, because the counselors didn't have their parents come, and they would sit and they would mingle with the families. Now it's a mad rush to get in only to get out, because you have to take your kids to Target, depending on if you have boys who need a haircut or girls who need to have their nails done or have lunch at a coveted, you know, spot, maybe on 101. And then you maybe go back in time to play a little tennis or pick a ball or take a walk around camp once. But it's not the way it was. But there is a push from parents who have older kids who do remember what it was like to, even if you don't stay at camp the whole entire time, to at least get back with it around an hour and a half, so we can all sit and be together. And it hasn't really returned to the beach yet, but there's a Phil Drasner tennis pavilion, if you would, a little like gazebo. And it is like the new place where people are sort of congregating and relaxing and getting out of the sun. And from there, parents and kids teaming up to play tennis and pickleball. So that's nice. I mean, it's been a conscientious effort and, you know, in parent groups on WhatsApp saying, okay, let's all go out first and come back and meet back at this time. And I think it will continue to do that. I think that as far as the pendulum swings one way, it usually does to some degree swing backward. And I think that's likely to happen with this too, where people want to, especially the parents, if for those of us who went to camp, you want to be at camp. I don't want to be at Target on Visiting Day. I'd rather be at camp, you know, enjoying the lake and seeing what the kids are making in arts and crafts, or just hanging out, you know, on a field and talking. So you're right. It's 100% different. It's not at all that feeling of sharing community and kahila and getting together with old friends. It's more of a mad dash to do the shopping spree.
And like, do parents make reservations to do things like, oh, I got to get a 3 o'clock haircut?
Reservations. I think it's like the supercuts. You know, you walk in and you sit in line, and maybe you divide and conquer with your family. Like, one person's going to get the bottled water, the waters of, you know, they're allowed to keep water under their beds, I think. And at least the older kids are. And maybe they're, you know, the kids want Papagino's or Chick-fil-A or whatever it is. And so they're not necessarily making reservations. And but I will say that my youngest this year, when we arrived, Stephen and I, my husband and I, our twins were still on this trip. So they were in Spain, and we got to camp, and my daughter had like a timeline of what we were doing for the day. She's 15. So she planned it to her desires and likes and wants and needs. I don't know if everybody's that organized, but we sure had an agenda and we had to complete it according to her timeline.
And you stuck to it.
Did. Yep, we did. She wanted to come back to camp and be at camp with us. So we quickly did the things we had to do outside of camp and came back.
Interesting. So now let's go back to the past.
Okay.
So your first year at camp was 1979.
That's right.
That was my Tel Chai year.
That is crazy to me.
I know.
I mean, I think back to my Kalanus, and not that I've memorized them. I sort of have memorized the covers, the front covers, to a certain degree, having looked at them so often for so many years. But if I recall correctly, your Tel Chai picture, you guys were sitting down at the beach on an upside down boat. Is that right or wrong?
I think we were in the water ski boats.
The water ski boats. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and check.
Yeah. And then let's go just for a second. 6 years later, you and I were together.
Again, right. You were my CIT counselor.
Right, one of them.
One of the four. We had a great time that summer. Fun. I mean, I have to say, my CIT summer and the summers that I was a CIT counselor or the CIT coordinator were some of my best summers ever. Maybe it's that year, that CIT year. I don't know, but it sure was special.
That was. It was a blast. Okay. 1979. By the way, that was, I don't know if it was still true that because Tel Chai was at the end of the road, the Olin were all scared to death of stopping on the way to Skunk Hollow. I don't know if but they were scared of us. When I was in Olin, we were scared of Tel Chai. We were like, keep going, don't stop, you know. Kids disappear in that bunk.
They disappear, they don't return. I think that, to be honest, it sounds kind of accurate. I mean, when you were going into third grade and there are boys who look like they're old enough to be your father, I mean, they might not really, but when you're in third grade, you don't really have a sense of age and time. These grown boys, some of whom shave, that's frightening to walk by, and the rowdiness and the ruckus and the whatever's happening in the bunks. They probably ran past Tel Chai.
Yeah, and they were giants to us.
They were. They were really. Completely. I mean, I remember in 1979, sitting at my table, which was table number four, and I'm pretty sure the numbers are still pretty much, for the most part, in the same order. 1, 2, 3, 4 were the ones, close to the flagpole, in between the two doors. And Brad Safran was one of my table counselors, and Nancy Ross, I want to say, was her name. And there was a girl who was in Kinneret, and her name was Melissa. And Melissa became like my big sister. I mean, she even cut my food for me. And to this day, I am still in touch with her through social media.
That's great. And by the way, I think it was Nancy Rossman.
Rossman. Okay, Rossman. Yeah. I mean, she talk about old. And I hope she doesn't hear this and think, oh, my God. But to me, she was as old as my mother.
Right.
I mean, she was an adult woman. She probably was only 22, maybe 23. But as far as I was concerned, she was like 36, 40. I don't know.
And she was our Tel Chai queen.
She was really beautiful. Yeah. I can understand why she was your queen.
So 79 to 81. Now, I don't know if anyone's listening that doesn't know this, but Lynn's mom, Shelley Shapiro, was a director from 1984 to 1993.
That's right.
A beloved director. And so your first year was 79. Then I think your sisters followed shortly after that, right?
Well, so what happened was I went to camp in 79. I was in Gvulot, and I only went for the first session. And the second year, 1980, I was signed up to go for the whole summer. At the time, I was the only kid in my family that was slated to go. At the last minute, Steve Thompson called my father, and said, we actually have a spot for your second child, Beth, my middle sister, if she would like to come as well, if for first session. And my parents at the time, we were financially stable, but we certainly weren't rich, and camp is not cheap. And my parents came to me and said, we have saved enough to spend 2 months at camp this summer. So we've already signed you up, and we will stick to that commitment if that's what you want, for you to go for the whole summer. But you also have the option of going for one session, the first session, and Beth could come with you. And there wasn't even a second of hesitation. Of course, I wanted my sister to come with me to experience what I had experienced. And what followed for the next couple months, because this probably was close to camp already, probably in April, maybe even as far towards the end of the school year as May, is my sister had two beds in her room, and I would sleep in her second bed, and I would say to her every single night, ask me about camp. And every single night we would go to bed talking about camp. And I know this wasn't a word when we were kids, but I was so jazzed that my little sister was going to come to camp with me, and I was so excited to share it with her. And she was equally as excited and probably a little hesitant and nervous, but every single night we would talk about camp and about optionals and or electives, as they might call them now, and about tables and about Shabbat and about king, queen, prince and princess and the shows and about the $1.98 beauty pageant and all the, I mean, I couldn't wait to share it with her. It was such a beautiful, looking at it as an adult was such a beautiful gift. And I'm so glad that I made that choice. The following summer, 1981, my mom started as the girl's head. So that was the summer that both Beth and I were there for the whole summer. And my little sister, Jill, who's 5.5 years younger than me, she started her tenure at camp. I don't know if it was 3 or 4 years, but that child was in Dahlia for an awful long time.
Interesting. So 79 and 80, you're telling me that your mom and dad did the pick up and drop off thing?
They did. They did the pick up and the drop off.
And like, were they, did they have camp under surveillance, you know, to see what might be?
You mean as far as my mom's future employment?
Yeah.
Well, let me just sort of backtrack and tell you a little bit about my mom's childhood. My mom went to Camp Naomi, which doesn't exist anymore. I believe it's now Neshoba or Neshoba North or something like that in the Lakes region of Maine. And as a kid, when I was a child, even before I went to Tevye, my mom would sing to us her camp songs. I could sing them to you right now if you wanted me to. I'm from Camp Naomi. My mother still is in touch with her camp friends and her campers and still tells us stories to this day. So camp was deeply embedded in my mom from a very young age. Her younger brother started to go to camp, not Naomi, because I believe that was an all-girls camp. And I don't remember if he went to what, I don't remember what camp he went to, but it was also in that general, you know, Maine Lakes region. He went for 2 months starting at 6 years old and went right through. And I mean, we didn't start at six, we started at eight. So they were a camp family as well. And I don't think my mother ever really got camp out of her system. And even upon dropping us off those first 2 years, she would say sort of tongue-in-cheek to Steve Thompson, if you have a job, let me know. And then 1 year, you know, he called and said, we do have an opening as a girls' head director. And I'm sure just like I did with my sister, there wasn't a heartbeat of a skip for my mother to say, yes, I'll be there. Because it's always been in her blood. So those first 2 years, she was probably living vicariously through us. And by my third summer there, she was there too.
Yeah, that all makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I thought maybe you were homesick or something, and that's why she got the job.
Nope, not at all. I did go to camp for one summer before Tevye, a camp called Camp Huckins. I think it was a YMCA camp. I went for 2 weeks. It was in Maine, and talk about homesick. I still have the letters. They say things to my parents like, if you love me, you'll come and get me. And if you don't, you'll find me on the highway. And I was, I guess, 9. And it was a 2-week camp. I was so miserable. I cried every single night, but I cried into my pillow. I didn't want anybody to know that I was crying. And I would write these awful, heart-wrenching, pathetic, pitiful letters to my family. And my mother would call the director. Their names, I think, were Adrian or something like that. I don't remember it right off the top of my head, but there was a man and a woman and they were married and they were a couple. And my mother would call the woman and say, can you please check on my child? I'm getting these awful letters. And they would come up to me and they would ask me how I was doing. I'd say, fine, everything's fine. I wouldn't even let them have an inkling that there was anything wrong. And they'd report back to my mother, she's great. She's having a good time. But I proceeded to write these awful letters, which I really should post on a blog someplace. Now, especially in hindsight of my camp experience, I drew circles around the tears that had fallen on the page saying, these are my tears, come and get me. And so you would think that, you know, I'd be gun shy and I'd be hesitant to give it a go, especially going for 2 additional weeks that first summer. But it was the antithesis of an experience. And it was like a hand in glove situation. It fit. The minute I was there, I knew that it felt good. It felt right. And there was not one tear spent. That's not to say the first 3 nights weren't hard or, you know, that even as I would tell campers all the way up to their boat years, it's an adjustment. It's hard. The first few nights you're away from your parents, you're away from your nice hot shower, and it's okay to be a little bit of in a transition mode. But soon after that, the same tears that were flowing because you maybe missed your parents were flowing because you didn't want to leave at the last, you know, day of camp.
Right, right. And I went to day camp for a couple of years prior to starting in bunk two.
Okay, so, you two missed Yavna.
I've gotten Yavna.
Biggest life's regrets, not that I had any control over it, but that I did not start Adalia, that I can't say I did the whole thing, is such a major bummer to me, because I'd love to have that claim to fame, but that, yeah, didn't happen.
Right, right.
I never got the shirt.
So I can't say that I had any issues of being homesick or anything like that. Not that I remember. But a couple of kids did. A couple of kids went home for good.
I don't remember kids really going home, at least not when my mom was director, because my mom was pretty hardcore. You know, if you let them come home, they'll never go back. And there were a few kids that I was the counselor of. I remember three different children, at least, who cried a lot, if not the whole entire summer. And some of them are very well-known, beloved Camp Tevye people to this day. And were lifers, you know, Camp Tevye lifers, even though the first year was really hard. And you want me to tell you who one of them was?
Sure.
Okay, it's actually the spouse of one of the past camp directors. Danielle Lipsius Brand cried and cried and cried and cried. It was so sad. It was pitiful because she's a beautiful girl and she's a beautiful woman. But that little face, and she was so dainty and so little, and she was so sad. But she made it through. And look what happened. I mean, she didn't not only stay, she married one of her Telchai guys. She has two kids who are Tevyites, and she became the director's consort. She was the wife of the director.
That's, yeah.
It's not easy for everybody, but,
no,
you know, if you can push through, then it's worthwhile to push through. There was a story about some kids whose parents were called saying, listen, they're really, really homesick. And the parents would say, they can cry the whole summer long, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not coming to get them. Which, in the end, is probably, unless there's some underlying issue that we don't know about or didn't know about, that's the right thing to do. It, you know, it makes the kids tougher and see what they're made of. And thick skin.
Right. And being a camp director yourself, you must have had some experiences like that with parents as well.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, I don't really remember it happening too much for the couple of years that I was an assistant director at residential camp. And it doesn't happen in the same way at day camp. At day camp, where I was the director, it's more of having to pull a child out of a car who's clinging to the headrest. So it's more physical than it is emotional. And it happens every morning. But you just keep doing it. Just keep doing it and showing them each day at the end of the day what was great about the day and having them remember that the next morning when they come and they're clinging to their parents' legs.
Right. Now, tell me about your, at Tevye, your post-CIT years, because I have no idea.
Okay, so I was a CIT in 1985. My first year, I was a counselor in Daphna, and the kids I was a counselor for were those same girls who later on began the Birya shirts that I was telling you about. And they were not an easy bunch at all. Spirited, but they had a mind of their own. So that was an interesting summer. I wasn't 100% sure that after that summer that I really wanted to go back. I thought being a counselor that summer was really hard. But the following summers, I switched to Dahlia. So instead of having SOFs, which is, you know, middle school years, which are tough, I went to having the little ones, and that was a labor of love. I mean, it might not have been easy, but those Dahlia girls, I'm actually having dinner with one of my Dahlia girls in a couple of weeks when she comes to Atlanta to visit, Simone Stallman, who is Deborah Sokol's cousin. I don't know if you remember the Sokols. Bart was my age, so he was I think he was a CIT with us. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, those Dahlia girls, I just loved being the first point of contact for their camp experience and making sure that it was stellar, not just good, but stellar. And then as you get older, you know, on staff, they need to utilize to put you in an older bunk. So then I ended up having Birya a couple times. I had CITs a couple times. I was the CIT coordinator for a year or two and finished up, I think, with Birya again. But I have to say, if I went back again now as a counselor, I think I'd have Dahlia again.
You would, huh?
I think so. Just love them when they're just so, like, doe-eyed and everything's an experience and everything's new and exciting. Not that it's not exciting when you're in Birya. It's super, super special. But you can make or break someone's entire camping experience by being the counselor when it's their first year.
That's so true. So true. Yeah. I've talked about this other episodes, the activities or electives, right, are so extensive today.
They have come up with a lot of very interesting things.
Yeah, and I can only imagine how many skills the staff as a whole needs to have today.
It's very, very different the way they structure camp. You know, there are some camps, residential camps or overnight camps, where they have two completely separate staffs. They've got bunk counselors and they've got activity counselors or activity staff. And the activity staff don't usually live in the bunks. Well, Tevye, I think it's safe to say, and, you know, anybody who works there now can, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it's sort of a hybrid, because what they have is the way we had it when we were kids, which is your bunk counselor at the beginning of first period leaves and goes off to their activity area as you and your bunkmates go off to your, follow your schedule. And so it's sort of like having a working parent, if you would. But every activity area has a director that is an adult that does not sleep in the bunk. So there are that many more adults on camp. I mean, for when we were younger, it was a director, a girl's head, a boy's head, and a program director. And for the most part, those were the four adults, adult adults. Now you have closer to 20 adults on camp. So it's a pretty, but then again, it's a different world. The world is so much more litigious, and there's so many more security issues, and, you know, you just, these are other people's children. You can't take any risks, you know, at all. Not that people were lackadaisical or not super focused or hyper-focused on the children's well-being. It's just that in this day and age, there's so many more things that can come back to bite you, you know, from a camp's point of view or a director's point of view, CYA, which is the right way to go.
Right. And so that's why friendship is so big now, right?
And they have the Gordon. One? Well, they have Friendship, which is used to be the last building on as you entered, or the first building as you entered camp. And more recently, in the past decade or so, I don't know exactly when, there was a new house put first in line on the right-hand side when you enter camp called the Gordon House in honor of Aaron Gordon. And that house was, you know, dedicated and built in honor of Aaron by Mike Levin, who actually lives here in Atlanta. And he was at Tevye as a kid. He is in his 80s. And he is somebody who I feel that the kids at Tevye should know about, because not only is he incredibly successful in his businesses that he has started or run, whether it's the Georgia Aquarium or Microtel Hotels, but he is an incredible philanthropist and is just trying to really do right by Jewish community, Atlanta Jewish community, the Jewish community as a whole. And he actually came out with a book very recently. I purchased it. I have not read it yet, but he is someone that is on my list to talk to because I want to do interviews with people who went to camp as far back as possible. And so I have a non-specified date interview with him in the somewhat near future.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm hopeful to get as many testimonials as I can to, just like you're doing with finding out about people's experiences, past, present, and future. I want to do the same, but I'm not sure that the people that I'm doing it with know what a podcast is.
Right, right.
Right. I think there'll be more in person or on the phone.
Right, right. So I missed Aaron Gordon by 2 years. His last year was 1972.
Gotcha.
And I didn't know anything about him. I heard he was tough and fair.
Okay.
And that's all. You know, so I'm really curious, like, do your kids, are they aware of much past history of Tevye?
Well, they are, but that's because I eat, breathe, and sleep Tevye. I mean, I think that there are a handful of us who are still so, it's so engraved in us, or embedded in us, if you would, the Tevye community, the Tevye culture, that our kids have been, I mean, my kids were singing Tevye songs before they went to Tevye. My kids knew, remember when we used to do Birkat Hamazon and the little hand thing with the four little hand motions at that one part at the end where mm-hmm. you do it really fast? My kids knew that before they went to camp. My kids played Keepin' Rhythm at the dining room, at the kitchen table, the dining room table before they ever went to camp. So yeah, they know things because their grandmother is talking. We still skip around the room for every person's birthday in whoever's house we're having a birthday party for. So they're not able to escape it. In fact, I will tell you honestly, we had a little fight in our house a couple weeks ago as to who loves Tevye most. And I still say that my mom will win. She might not get up there as much as she wants. especially now that my kids are older and I don't need any more help getting them in and out of, you know, camp because they can do it themselves. But she did come with me the first couple of years to help. I mean, having three kids go to camp, it was not easy unloading all the crap and getting them all, you know, getting their stuff in their bunk. So my mother was kind enough to come and help. The one year, even Barnett Cohen and Lauren Cohen, Barnett's one of my closest friends from camp, and his lovely wife who he met at camp, we each took a kid. My mom took a kid, I took a kid, and Lauren took a kid, and we got them unpacked. I mean, it takes a village, you know? But the blood, the Tevye blood runs deep in our house. I'm sitting here at my desk talking to you, looking at my Tevye mug, looking at my Tevye keychain, looking at, I mean, I've got Tevye swag everywhere. It's all around me. It makes me feel good. I love it. I know that I am not part of the everyday current fabric of Tevye life, but Tevye life will always be part of my everyday. It's something that I can't separate. It made me who I am as a Jew, as a person, as an adult. And so when it's that much of your life, I don't think your kids get to steer from it. They don't. I mean, I would have been shocked if my kids didn't want to go to camp after the way they were exposed to it. I mean, I used to sing when they were babies, Shir Hamalo, to put them to sleep. I used to sing Birya Nights and Amid Verdant Woodlands. Those were the nighttime go-to-bed songs. So it was sort of inevitable, I think. I think the writing was on the wall, and it was almost like it was, they were prescribed to be in it to win it, because that's just, it's just who we are. It's part of the Shapiro family deal, you know?
Right, and they hit the ground running as a result.
Yeah, they did. They did. And never looked back. I mean, I don't ever remember anyone saying, I'm not going back. My youngest did have a hard first year, but it turned out she was sick the whole time. We didn't know she was sick, but she struggled a little bit, not feeling well, and therefore there were a lot of tears. But I think that they were misinterpreted for being homesick when she really just didn't feel good. But other than that, I mean, we're fighting about who loves Tevye more. Is that a normal family fight?
Of course it is.
Thank you for validating me.
Well, you know, I was thinking, I had skipped the year after my Talchai year, I skipped it.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
And then you came back for your first year on staff?
Well, so I went on an Israel trip in 1980 with my temple confirmation class.
And that would have been your CIT year?
Yes.
Interesting. And was that the right choice? Are you glad you went with that group versus the Tevye group?
I'm not convinced either way, because it was a wonderful experience, obviously.
Sure.
But I do think, you know, what would it have been like to have been with the same group, you know, and the counselors that were CIT counselors back in 1980?
Yeah.
So in 1981, when I came back, I was a kitchen boy.
You were?
Yep. Because I wasn't a CIT the year before.
And that was the prerequisite to be a first-year counselor.
Oh, and I had conversations with Steve Thompson.
Interesting.
I don't want to say begging.
I would have begged.
To be a counselor. And of course, there was, you know, it was a rock solid prerequisite.
Well, the thing is, and that's why they changed it now, because they want staff who are older, whether it's ACA, American Camping Association, you know, guidelines or standards that your counselors are a certain age. It really, if you're going to be honest, it's children watching children. At least that's how it was for us at day camp, you know, where you can have even younger staff members. But that's why they have it set up the way they do now, where you have to have basically finished high school to be a counselor. Where in the past, you could have been going into your senior year, I believe, to be a first-year counselor, a JC, which there really wasn't a differentiation between the two. I mean, you did the same job. Maybe you got paid less. But counselor's a counselor.
Right, right.
So you came back and you were a kitchen boy. How many years did you do that for?
Just one.
And so let me just backtrack and see if I understand this. You were there for that Telchai, mm-hmm. your CIT year, you went on an Israel trip with your synagogue. What would have been your JC year, you were in the kitchen, and then you came back for your first year on staff, your second year, technically eligible to be a staff member.
Correct.
Wow. Did you fall right back into it? Or did you feel like things had transpired or relationships had been forged or that you had missed out on something and you had to sort of re-enter the life, or was it seamless?
No, it was seamless. I fell right back into it.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, being a kitchen boy, that, you know, aside from working meals.
Well, who was the head of the kitchen when you were there? Was it John Russo? Big John Russo? Or the Gallo brothers?
It wasn't.
Or Tony Parente.
Tony Parente was there. The head chef, his name was Bill something.
Okay, so that's Bill Gallo. Bill and John Gallo.
No, it wasn't. No. Bill and John. Yeah, but.
I don't remember Bill. But then again, I was little.
Yeah. Bob Gallo.
Oh, Bob there. Gallo. Bob and Bob Gallo. Yeah, Bob there. Gallo. That's right. You're 100% correct.
Yeah.
Bob and John Gallo. They were some hardcore cookies, those two. They didn't mess around.
No, they didn't.
But they were fun. They were nice. Mm-hmm. They just were a little rough around the edges.
So that year gave me the chance to take it all in, mm-hmm. because I wasn't stuck to a schedule, you know, and I could, you know, go see any activity I wanted, go any game I wanted.
Yeah, you could so float around.
I remember that.
That's cool.
But I was still, you know, wasn't quite tied into everything. It was okay. It was okay.
More people did that than we realized, whether it was because back in the day, you had to be asked on the Israel trip. You had to be asked back as a CAT. It wasn't just an automatic thing the way it is now. People who did not, and there were only a certain number of people that they could take for those spots because there's only X number of kids on the Israel trip, and there were only X number of kids they could fit into a bunk. If you didn't make that top number, whether it was 15 or 18 or whatever it was, and you still wanted to be at camp, a lot of people chose to, well, I would just say boys, chose to be in the kitchen.
Right.
And I don't blame them. I'd do anything to be at camp. I don't care what I do. I keep telling the people who work there now, all I want to do is walk around with a broom and clean up camp. And I'm not kidding.
Right. I mean, that's the way to stay in, right?
That's the way to stay in.
Yep.
I mean, I would do anything to, you know, I don't want to be there and cramp my kids' style. I want them to have a typical camp experience. But they have now all gone through Birya and Tachai. I've given them what I promised I would give them. And that is, you know, typical camp life, campership life. And now it's fair game. So if there's a job for me, then I would take it.
Sure. I'm not sure I would.
You're never too old to go back to camp. You're never too old to go home. That's what I say. You're never too old to go to home.
That's true.
And that's the thing. Part of this whole being on the canoe on the lake is when I go out there on that lake, I try to do it during Shabbat or Havdalah. I don't want to be walking around camp and, you know, upset the system or intrude on my kids' space. But I love camp just as much now, all these years later, as I did when I was there. I remember being a counselor at camp and during Shabbat services, knowing what I had and just sitting there and crying out of gratitude and feeling of peace and the wonderment of this community. And all I'm trying to do when I'm on that lake is just attain a little tiny bit of that. And I think I might have, or I know I embarrassed one of my kids this summer doing it. And I feel bad about that, but not so bad that I won't do it again. When you see them living and experiencing what you have already lived and experienced and getting so much joy out of it and it filling them up, it brings you such nachas, it brings you such joy that it's something to revel in. And I just want to get a tiny glimpse, a tiny taste of it. My kids have been at camp. I'm not sure what the rules are, what the protocol is. I've never asked to come to a meal. I've never asked to be invited for Shabbat. And no one has ever asked me to or invited me to. So I tried to get a little tiny bit of what I could without breaking any rules and without inserting myself or, you know, being that parent that's just, you know, up their grill so far that they're like, we're sorry, you can't come to camp anymore. But so it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. And I wanted to videotape it. They told me not to, so I didn't, which I totally understand. But if you lived it, or if your kids are living it and they're coming home feeling the way I felt or I feel, or my kids are coming home, or their kids are coming home the way my kids feel, gosh, I would love to, you know, catch it in a bottle and reproduce it and sell it because it's priceless. It's priceless.
You're so right. And I wanted to say one thing or a couple things. I mean, obviously, everyone knows, and I, I just want to say it anyways. Your mom was a joy as director and girls' head counselor. Your dad was a joy visiting on weekends, too. I can't forget about that.
That is very nice for you to say. Yeah. You know, camp is an interesting place in that every single person there has a place to be, a job to do, or a schedule. And it wasn't always easy for my dad. I will say that all the guys, my Biri Techayir guys, and the ones a little bit older than me, even the ones a little bit younger than me, they always embraced him and loved that he comes around or came around. And even to this day, people always ask, how's Howie? You know, how's Howie doing? Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful. I wish that he had taken advantage of more that camp had to offer, playing tennis with people or gone out in a canoe. But I'm not sure that he felt like it was his place. I think he felt like I feel now. He doesn't want to intrude. And my dad had a job. He was making a living. So it wasn't like he was going to be able to work at camp, nor did he necessarily want to. But just to be up there on the weekends, you know, to see my mom and not really us. I mean, it was nice. It was a bonus to be able to see my dad, but that's not part of the program you sign up for when you're at camp. But I don't think it was always easy to be the lone soldier who didn't have a specific camp identity. You know what I mean?
I think he had a camp identity. You know, it was nice.
You felt that way, but I'm not sure he felt that way.
I know.
You know, I wish he had owned it more so that he could feel the love that I think people do feel for him. Because he wasn't just some director's husband. He was Howie and well-loved and well-remembered. But when I tell him, I think he sort of thinks I'm giving him lip service.
No, you can tell him I said that's not the case.
I will tell him. I'll make him listen to the podcast.
Good, good. Yeah, and you know, you said it a little bit earlier. You can measure how much a camper or counselor loves camp is because you know how happy they are to get there and how sad they are to leave.
Can I just tell you that the last night of camp, it was just like a lake on the fields or, you know, wherever we were, just crying and crying and crying, the tears, and then parents having to pry their kids off their friends and trying to be the last one to leave because you don't want to go. Now they've turned the last night of camp, after banquet, they have the actual evening activity is called Cry Fest. That's what they call it.
I've heard that.
And the kids go to wherever they go. I don't know if it's Elbes or the new structure that was where the Dell was. I don't even know what they call it, but the pavilion, which is beautiful. They all just sit in there and they cry. It's so sad. It's the saddest thing I've ever seen. But at the same time, I totally get it. We were doing it. It was just unofficial.
Right. And we were signing Kalinas all night.
Signing Kalinas. But they've changed that too. They don't do the rush order to put them together by the last day. They send them in the mail now, which is fine. They're beautiful now. They're in color and they're not spiral bound anymore. They're sewn or glued or whatever they do, but they sure are lovely to see them in color. It's great.
That's what I've heard.
But I treasure my Kalinas. They are like prized possessions. God forbid there was ever a fire in my house. There's this box that has a blanket my grandmother made, knit me. She would knit one for each of us, and all my camp stuff. That's what's going out. That and probably my ketubah. But I mean, and the important paper, you know, fire box thing. But that stuff's coming. I mean, because it's irreplaceable. I'm not going to be able to, you know, I can always get another shirt, but I'm not going to get another staff shirt. You know, I'm not going to get that one that's the light blue from 1986. It's just not going to happen. You know, they're cherished items. And those Kalinas are something special. I got to say, I've been talking with the powers that be about seeing if we can get them digitized and put up online so everybody has access to them. As they like, because I think that that's part of the history of Tevye and that's part of, or any of the Cohen camps for that matter, and being able to stay connected with people. If we live in this digital age and social media, then having access to people should be a little bit easier than it is. I mean, right now it's sort of like you have to go back and look through your Kalinas and like, do they still live at the house on, you know, whatever lane in, you know, Framingham, Mass? And they probably don't. So it's a little bit of digging and, you know, sleuthing on the internet. And it should be a little bit easier, I think.
Right, right. Well, and I wanted to get this podcast going, and I had it in my mind for quite a while before I actually started, because there's some history that I think people would enjoy hearing about from the past, and also like you, Phil, you and Matt Brand also filled me in on a lot of the details of camp today, which is so different. And that I would think would be of interest to some people as well who have no idea.
Yeah, I think.
And I want to continue doing this.
I think it's a great idea. I love the idea of taking the present and sharing it with the people from the past. And I love getting the past and sharing it with the people of the present. And I think that, archiving and testimonials and just getting as much information as we can, whether it's online or in a physical space, I think it's really, really important because the history is so rich, so beautiful. And just like with anything, if we don't preserve it, I don't want it to be lost or forgotten.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah. So I hope you continue on with the One Mason Road podcast. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank you for joining me tonight, Lynn. This has been a terrific, terrific discussion.
Great trip down memory lane.
Absolutely.
Down Tevye Lane.
So if you'd like to be a guest or have ideas for future episodes, you can reach me via Facebook Messenger. Text me or email me at info@onemasonroad.com. Please subscribe to the One Mason Road podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Past guests included Mark Adelman, Matt Brand, Linda Schnall-Hill. You can also listen at onemasonroad.com. And don't forget, join the One Mason Road Camp Tevye group on Facebook. Thanks again to Lynn Shapiro-Eisenstein for spending time with me tonight. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep in touch.